This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio, and we listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes, and maybe even to find your next favorite artist or band. And if you like what you hear, make sure that you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Lauren Mabry. I'm Megan Aftermat, and I'm here with host Kara Manning at WFUV. Kara, just for our listeners, because, you know, everybody has different styles, tastes, flavors, I want to let everybody know that Lauren is actually a member of the band Churches, but she's here today to talk about her new solo project. What was it like to have her here today and get the chance to talk to her about this work that she's put out into the world on her own?
Well, I have been a longtime admirer of Lauren Mabry, not only as a member of Churches, but what she represents as one of the most ferociously fascinating figures in the music industry right now. I think that not only does Vicious Creature represent an exciting new direction for her, in addition to Churches as a solo artist, but I also really relished the opportunity to finally have a chance to sit down with a woman I really admire, and I really admire Lauren Mabry. She's been a really outspoken advocate of what it means to be a woman in the music industry, for mental health, anti-online bullying. She sort of carries a big mantle for a very small person because she is quite petite.
Yeah.
So I was really over the moon to have the chance to have a one-on-one conversation with her, not only talking about the things I just covered and this new solo album, Vicious Creature, but also, you know, some of her fond recollections of what it was like working with The Cure's Robert Smith and a lot more. So I was just delighted that she was here. And this was actually a return for Lauren, who was last at FUV back in 2013 with Churches.
Amazing. What is the first song that we're going to hear in this session?
Well, it is actually the very first song that kicks off the album Vicious Creature. This is Something in the Air on FUV Live Sessions.
Crashed into a man on a mission, hands up in my face. Instead of acting surprised or questioning why, I say you're a little late. Eye for an eye, X marks the spot, will I atone for my mistakes? Am I sobering up, will I be pious enough and build castles for a saint? Screaming through a red, a white, a blue megaphone. Go to hell or go home, or you will die on your own. You come up with your stories, conspiracy theories of why we're all here. Oh, I just wanna be someone, someone who's happy. But why'd you even care? Must be something. Wanna spend today obsessively wishing to know what happens next. If you wanna believe, then that's your prerogative. I wish you the very best. But there it goes, that funny feeling reeling me back in. I can't tell if it's a blessing or a sin. You come up with your stories, conspiracy theories of why we're all here. Oh, I just wanna be someone, someone who's happy. But why'd you even care? Must be something in the air. Something in the air. Must be something. Something in the air. blue megaphone. Go to hell or go home, or you will die on your own. I just wanna be someone, someone who's happy. But why'd you even care? Must be something in the air. Something in the air. Must be something in the air. Something in the air. All that static and the megaphone. Too much noise might leave you on your own. All that static and the megaphone. Too much noise might leave you on your own.
On FUV Live, that is Lauren Mabry with Something in the Air from her debut solo album, Vicious Creature. It has been a dozen years since Lauren was last here at WFUV with Churches back in September 2013. And since the release of that band's debut album, The Bones of What You Believe, Lauren has not only ascended as a lauded singer and songwriter, but as a consequential activist and advocate for women in the music industry and far beyond those borders. Vicious Creature is Lauren's declaration of artistic independence and integrity, a chance for her to exhale and expand her own potential without compromise. It is an honor to have Lauren Mabry back at WFUV. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I'm all blushy.
Oh, first of all, welcome back. It's been a long time since we've seen you here. And we were talking before the interview about what you remembered of being here last. And it had to do with your wardrobe.
Yes. When we were in the van over this morning, I looked up a picture of that first session that Churches did. And I, for some reason, we're all wearing variations of denim shirts. I don't really know if any of us, I've never thought of any of us owning a denim shirt, but we all have one on. And yeah, I think it was one of the first times I'd been on like an American college campus. So we were all really like, ooh, about that.
Wow.
And yeah, it was still very early in the band and early in us doing radio sessions. And I look at the picture and I'm like, I remember that being a nice day. We look stressed. I think we probably were a bit stressed, but yeah, it was
and
fun.
And it's extraordinary when you think of where you were back then and where you are now. And, you know, Something in the Air, which you just played, it not only kicks off the album, but Vicious Creature, but at a time when there's so much sort of static down the megaphone, the song really struck me today in a different way than when I first heard it. And I'm wondering, what does Something in the Air mean to you, and why was it key that you lead off Vicious Creature with that track?
Well, I wrote that song with my friend Dan McDougall, and we, both British people, and we wrote it in London the week of the UK election last year. So I think we were thinking about a lot of those things, and then we had bumped into somebody in the canteen area of the studio who, I never want to say who it is because I don't want to throw them under the bus because they thought they were in a safe space. But it was somebody that was pretty prominent British rock star in the 90s. And then they knew Dan from some other things and were chatting. And then they started talking about 5G and electricity and how being in the studio all day is really unhealthy for us because of it. And I was like, oh, and we were very nice and listened to this. And then we went back into the studio and we were like, what? This is a bit mad. And then just kind of got into the, why were we in this position that we were in where, you know, people believe things so strongly, so vehemently, and they really need other people to agree on that. And lucky for us that Britain made a slightly smarter decision in terms of that election. But unfortunately now, when we were playing that song and the shows on this tour of the States, I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
It's got a different kind of relevance now,
I think. It does. So, very much so. It's interesting, which is why it sort of hit me like a gut punch listening to you sing it again today live. But I love the stripped down version of it too. And Dan, you know, you worked with a variety of people on this album as you know, cohorts and co-writers, but Dan McDougall and Ethan Gruska and Matthew Corman, Greg Kirsten, who you've worked with in the past with Churches, Caroline Pinnell, and Tobias Gesso Jr. But working with all of these people, it was still your voice and it was still your ideas with no one sort of saying, nah, you know, we don't agree, and you having to compromise as you would in a band. I mean, a band is a democracy. Mm-hmm. Having that freedom to walk in and have 40 songs that you have written and then determining what to cull and what to keep, your decision, I can't even imagine how thrilling that feeling must have been for you to know that this was your baby.
Yeah, I think on the good days, I was like, this is the independence that I really craved. And, you know, I love the band. I love being in the band. But I also think that it's natural as a person and in a creative headspace to want to figure out your own identity within that or outside of that. And on good days, I was like, this is so thrilling and so exciting. And I get to take the reins and be in charge of so much of that. On a bad day,
yeah,
I think I was like, this is completely overwhelming. I have to be in charge of every decision. And especially, you know, there were points in the making of the record where, you know, there were some personnel changes and there were some tricky things like that. And I definitely did get to certain points where I sent a dramatic email to our managers about being away on a writing trip and I wasn't getting anything good. And I was just like, I think we need to call it. I think I need to go home. I can feel my brain going a wee bit funny and yeah. it's time to go. And then I am an idiot because on that writing trip, we wrote the first couple of songs with Dan and then we went back and finished the record with him. But I think sometimes you just run out of like emotional resilience or something. But no, I think when I look at it now, I feel pretty proud of it. I'm like, I think I'm proud of the storytelling on it. And that was the most important thing to me, was to have a creative space that was a lot more focused on the narratives and the lyrics. And I definitely wanted to work on that part of my craft. And hopefully I'll take that back to the band when the time comes.
Well, and not only that, but you have said that you were able to do certain songs, like, for example, listening to like A Work of Fiction or Are You Awake or Oh Mother, which you're going to do in a bit. Those are very different songs than from what churches would do. Mm-hmm. So you were able to access a creative outlet, a creative part of yourself, a different avenue. And I would imagine that there is some trepidation involved about saying, well, you know, I've not really necessarily done this kind of music before in churches. Mm-hmm. I now want to do it on my own. It can be scary, but also freeing concurrently, I would imagine.
I think so, yeah. I think one of the biggest challenges for me is, up till now, how the band is written is that we tend to start with music first and production first, and then we'll put in a vocal melody and the lyrics will always go last. And obviously that's worked very well for us and I'm very proud of what we've done. And I think sometimes that's tricky if you aren't connecting with the sonics. Like, you really like it, but I don't have anything in my lyric bank in my brain that would fit with that. Sometimes that's kind of where we run aground, where everyone's really keen on the thing, but I'm like, emotionally, I don't know, that doesn't, I can't figure out where I would fit into that landscape. And similarly, there's like song titles or concepts or lyrics that I have that don't work in those contexts. Like, I think it would be very hard to take the lyrics like Oh Mother and put that into any Church's album up until now. Like, I think going forward, like, you know, we've been having really fun, exciting, creative conversations about just kind of changing things up and like trying to get new stimuli for all of our writing brains. But I think it would be an unusual choice to right. go into a church's writing session and been like, so today, piano ballad about mortality. I don't think that would it would be a confusing one maybe for most people who listen to us.
But I'm really hoping that with Vicious Creature, you also now realize that this is an important outlet in conjunction with churches, is to give yourself that ability to do that solo work that you need to do or want to do.
I think so, yeah. I think for a long time, I had this really kind of like Goonies idea of what being in a band was. And I think that that's very positive in a lot of ways. But I also think that's an awful lot of pressure to put on everybody and to put on one project, is that this has to be the only creative outlet you ever have about anything. And I think for quite a few years, I'd wanted to do something outside the band, but I didn't want to be seen as disloyal or ungrateful or jeopardize what we already had. And after a point, I was like, well, now you are making it unhealthy by staying put when you don't necessarily want, not that I don't want to, but when you, there are other things that you know would be just healthy and fun for your creative brain. And when I started writing, I didn't even necessarily know that I would put anything out. I think I just wanted to see what writing is like when I'm not in the situation that I know so well, for better or worse. And good discomfort I think is sometimes helpful.
Now, how has the live aspect of touring behind this record been different? For example, for you as a front person presenting your own music on the road, you know, have you sort of changed up even that aspect of how presentational it is, or even theatrical? Because there is definitely, even though this isn't a conceptual album, there's certainly a narrative arc that I sensed in it about where it feels like an assessment of where you are in your 30s, looking back and looking back at also this young woman that you were and are no longer, that naive person who wandered into the music industry. Or it is about a blossoming, maybe, more or less. Yes? No?
I think so, yeah. I feel like it did feel to me like there was definitely an end of an era of sorts. Not the end of the band, but it felt like we'd reached the end of a chapter. We were out of our record contracts. We'd come to the end of that cycle and we were re-signing the band. And the guys in the band aren't substantially older than me, but they are older than me. And I was 23, 24 when the band started, and they were already in their 30s. Now, every time I reach the age that they were when profound things happened to the band, I think about how it was, I'm sure, still very overwhelming for them, but we were just having such profoundly different experiences. And yeah, I think I was reflecting on a lot of those things. And then there was, you know, things happening in my own life that were making me quite reflective about certain things and just how you spent time. And yeah, I'm really grateful for everything that happened in the band, and I wouldn't change any of it. But some of it does make me a bit sad when I look back on it, and some of it makes me pretty mad when I look at it. So I think that was like, it's like kind of a process of acceptance and coming to terms with those things. And I think probably there was a lot of that in the album, and being allowed to be sad about some of those things, or being allowed to be angry about some of those things, and then just being able to put it down the river. I think if I'd never had the chance to make anything about that, I think I would be stuck.
Is there a particular song right now that you're doing live on tour that feels really empowering in a way to be able to sing out, you know, in a way that you have never been able to do fronting churches?
And there's a song on the record called Sorry, Etc., which I think is probably the most obviously about that time period. And I think that one's been very fun to play and see, especially how it's connecting with a lot of women in the audience. Because I think tapping into those kind of things is not taboo, not frowned upon, but I feel like it's interesting when I think about being 25 and being in churches. I think there were a lot of people telling me I was angry all the time, and I don't think I felt very angry. I think I was just like, well, no, that's common sense. Just be nice. And I spent so long with people telling me that I was an angry person.
But women get that a lot.
Yeah.
If you speak your mind, you're angry. If you speak with honesty, you're angry or emotional.
And I think, like, when I started making this record and, like, actually accessing some of that, I was like, I'm much angrier now than I was when I was 25. But I feel like that's just the way that you shame women generally, especially young women, out of having their agency and having their opinions. And I think there were a lot of people in the media and people in the fan base to a degree that just thought I was being ungrateful and this like angry woman trope, and I was like, I don't think so. Yeah. And then now I'm like, well, I am angry about this, this, and this, and I think that that's perfectly acceptable.
The lyrics of Sorry, Etc. used to be called One of the Boys, but you changed the title to Sorry, Etc.
Yes, yeah.
But basically, I killed, lost, bit my tongue, sold my soul to be one of the boys.
Mm.
But you don't have to be that on this album, which is really great.
Yes. And I don't know. I think, yeah, I've been very lucky to mostly be surrounded by really thoughtful, cool guys. But ever since I was 15, I've only ever been in bands with men. And I think, you know, I worked with some incredible men on this record. I'm definitely being paranoid now about all the times that people have been like, well, she hates men. I'm like, I don't. But I think that that's an unusual way to grow up. If every van tour I've ever been on, every bus tour, every writing session, everything has only ever been with men, and mostly men who are older than me. I think that was an odd way to get to be socialized, sort of.
Well, most women in most work environments have dealt with the same thing, is that you're often the only woman or one of two or three women in a room. And so what you're talking about is not uncommon, because you do try to strive to fit in so that, you know, you're not sort of saddled with this trope of being angry or emotional or, you know, opinionated.
Yeah. And I definitely, for years, I think I would really dig into the common interests that everybody had. And I would, when I played drums in a band, also I need to be able to play faster, harder than any guy that we play with, just so that they don't comment on it. And I need to know more about Fugazi B-sides and like the In on the Kiltick or demos, so that when I'm in the van, like it's almost like I feel like I'm like a little alien studying, assessing the culture and then like trying to fit in. And yeah, I think after a point I was like, well, that, I don't know if, nobody asked me to do that, but I don't know if it was that helpful to do that. And yeah, sometimes when I get frustrated about not being able to connect with certain men in my professional life, I'm like, well, but they don't know anything about you really, because you go in and just assimilate to the environment. And yeah, maybe that wasn't that healthy in hindsight, I don't know.
But it's a way, I think, that a lot of women, we survive, is that we try to assimilate because of the fact that oftentimes our opinions or our thoughts are disregarded because they don't align.
Yeah.
With what, yeah. So.
And I don't think it made people like me better. I don't think it got me any more respect. I think it just got me left alone for the most part. But did that actually help anybody? All that kind of, not pandering, but it was helpful for the survival to a point. And then after a point, I was like, maybe it would be helpful for you psychologically to start being a little bit more honest with yourself, maybe.
Right. Lauren Mabry here on FUV Live. I'm Kara Manning. I'm so happy that she is here because she has a remarkable solo album called Vicious Creature. And the track, Oh Mother, is really very much sort of situated as the centerpiece of this album. It's a 6-track in. And it's, I would say, probably the most personal thing you've ever written. Wrong? Right?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, this record's definitely more personal than any Church's album. And even the personal songs on Church's records, I think those are, the lyrics are more obscure or obtuse. So that was a very cathartic one to make. But then when I realized I'd have to play it in front of people, I was like, I've made a grave error.
I would imagine that the first, you know, when you were recording it, it was emotionally hard initially to sing through.
Weirdly it was kind of, I think it was the fastest song on the record to write, and it was the last song that we wrote. And we wrote the whole thing
it was with Dan, right?
Yes, yeah. With Dan McDougall, and we wrote the whole thing top to bottom probably in a couple of hours. And he had the idea of writing it as this kind of progression of time in the narrative. And yeah, that was an odd afternoon in the studio, because we're still, you know, self-conscious British people. So we're still making jokes and having a laugh. And then we're having a small cry by the piano. And then we're like, oh, no. The first time I played it, I did make a big mess of it. And I did a big accidental sob. So now I just stare into the middle distance and and just get through it. But it's been really nice to start playing it at live shows and have people talk to us about it, because I feel like it's, everyone's got mum stuff, good or bad.
What
got mum stuff.
What have people said to you that you recall?
Just people talking about their own experiences with their, like, losing a parent or a parent and illness. And yeah, I think it's a sadly unifying thing that none of us can get away from.
I hope it's okay to ask, what did your mom think when she first heard the song?
I made sure I wasn't around when I said, I did the send it by email. Which is maybe not a very nice thing to do to somebody. But I did give a disclaimer and then sent it. But I think it was for the best that I wasn't in the same room when that was happening. Again, though, we're Scottish, so I think she was probably like, oh, good, apologising, I see. So I think she was probably quite happy with that. But I'm not sure if I consciously set out to try to write that song. I don't think I would have done it. It just kind of came out by accident. Like, Dan started playing those chords and then I started trying to write yet another song about nostalgia or homesickness or whatever my favorite themes are, and he, good producer, good writer, was like, I think it needs to be something more personal than that, and we know each other well enough to know things that are going on in each other's lives. And he was like, maybe we dig here. I'm like, I don't know, but I'm glad that we did.
And I'm glad that you decided to do it here today at WFUV. This is Lauren Mabry, joined by Heather Nation, and this is Oh Mother.
Dress me up, take me to school. About all the bad and good. Oh, making my bed in a wooden house, thinking about if I make you proud, and it kills me to know you won't be around. Oh mother, what will I do without you? If only I could go back in time, I'd stay a little longer and make things right. But for now I'll call you to say goodnight. Oh mother, what will I do without you? Oh mother, what will I do without you?
That is Lauren Mabry with Oh Mother on FUV Live Sessions. I'm Kara Manning, and you'll find the studio version of Oh Mother on Lauren's debut solo album, Vicious Creature, which is out now. I should ask, you have relocated to Los Angeles.
Yes.
And, you know, we spoke a little bit about missing Scotland. What do you miss about Glasgow?
So I feel like I miss home the place, but home the people. More than anything else, and I don't know how much longer we'll stay in the States. I think
right.
It helps to live with another British person because we have like an understanding. And if either of us is sad, we'll go to the little expat shop and pay over the odds for a box of Jaffa cakes or something.
There you go. And then, exactly.
And then that helps. We're like, okay, the Cadburys will save us.
Yes. I have to ask you, because of the fact that he is very much a survivor, and you were very fortunate because Robert Smith does not do a lot of collaborations with a lot of people.
He does not, no.
No, and he chose to work with churches, and you directly have had the chance to be on stage with him and perform. That must have been just a lovely experience.
I still can't really believe that it happened, and he's been so kind and so generous to all of us, and he sends me nice emails about songs when they come out and about the record, and I just think that that's such a...
He emailed you about Vicious Creature.
He did, yeah.
I sent
him a link to listen to.
Well, oh, you
he,
did?
Like, he said congratulations on Something in the Air coming out, I think, and then I sent him a link to the album, and he was like, I don't like to use listening links. He's like, I've pre-ordered it. And I'm like,
that's so sweet. That's,
yeah, and yeah, he was so incredible to work with. Like, we never really thought he would email us back, I don't think. We were just like, let's just put it out into the universe. Everyone's in their house because it's 2020. Yeah, he responded, and we sent him a selection of songs, and we're like, change anything you want, redo anything you like. And yeah, especially about lyrics, because he's, you know, he's such an amazing writer, such a great world builder. And I was like, delete all the lyrics, replace them. And then the fact that he was like, no, I like the lyrics. I like the story of it. I'll just do them as is. I'm like, what? That's so mad to me to think that he saw anything useful in anything that I wrote down on a page.
But I can see where he would connect with you. You know, I really do. And I mean, and would you, do you, have you thought or contemplated maybe having the opportunity to work together again with him?
I mean, I feel like that's once is more than anything one could ever have guessed. But plus, I don't want to get in the way of any other upcoming cure.
I know.
Because he says there's another one almost.
He says that he has two more, in fact, that he wants to get out there in the universe.
But and that record's so special. Like, and even like, it's just been lovely, mind-blowing to have conversations about creativity with him, because as somebody that's worked in it for so long, he still has such a fresh enthusiasm for art and for music and for how you make things, and like he just is always curious about how people are doing things. And I think that, you know, a lot of people, including myself at times, you get kind of jaded about it, or you know too much about how the sausage is made, so it's hard to feel enthusiastic about it. And even the handful of interviews we did around that release, he would always be adamant that he was like, no, this is work. Like, making songs is not work. And because he was talking about having a studio in his house, and someone was like, oh, it must be hard to separate. Like, what's the work-life balance? And then he was like, well, music is life. That's part of my life. That's not my work. like, this, what we're doing right now, is work. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I would never, I would be so scared to say that to a journalist. But I'm like, Rob can say what he wants. I think he should. And then I thought about it. I was like, that's true. All the other things are in service of the thing that you do it because you love to do it or you have to do it. And I thought he was just amazing.
Do you see yourself, like, years from now being like Robert Smith to an up-and-coming artist and being able to sort of impart that knowledge that you have had and have been very outspoken about and being able to talk to another generation of young musicians about this is how you're going to get through this. This is how you're going to continue to be able to make your music and also navigate the press and navigate all of the other...
I mean, I hope so. I think... Yeah, it's been nice even like the last, I would say I've noticed it more in the last five or so years maybe, especially young female artists, like when we have a chance to tour with people or play with people and just give some reassurance that I kind of wish I'd had from somebody at that time. Because, you know, we never got media training, and I guess the time period of churches starting to get successful coincided with a certain era of the internet. And I think now we know a lot more about what that is like and how... specifically that pickles your brain probably.
Yeah. Do you pay attention to social media at this point, or do you allow your team to deal with it?
I am very lucky. I have a company that we work with, so right. Like, yeah, I don't tend to be on it a huge amount myself, and in some ways I find that I'm like, it's quite sad to, because that's kind of the only place you can directly communicate with people who support what you're doing, or you're not having to go through a conduit to say what you mean to say. But I know that it's not good for me. It doesn't feel nice. So I think I'm conscious of wanting it to feel representative of me and, you know, feel authentic and not just be like HQ updates all the time. But when I think about the impact that had on certain eras of my life, I don't like it at all. So yeah, and I think now we're more conscious of how damaging that is and what a real psychological impact those kind of things can have on people. So my main port of call when I talk to people that are dealing with stuff like that is just to kind of validate it and be like, just because it happened on the internet, your brain does not distinguish between a death threat on the internet and a death threat through your mailbox. Like, this, your brain can't do that. You're just a little mammal. You can't do that. So yes, clearly therapized about it at this point. So that helps.
Lauren Mabry, it's really just so remarkable to be sitting across from you because of the fact that I've just admired you like since Churches, and I was over the moon to know that you had this solo album coming out. And Anywhere But Dancing, which is the third song that you're going to do today, it really is, you have a lyric in here. I don't know what is worse, the kindness or the cursing of dancing on my own. Where were you when, like, what was your mindset when this song sort of came about? Because it's a really interesting song with a lot of layered meanings. It is not nostalgia, but it does reach back to who you were when you were much younger, yet from a sort of purview of today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I always feel a little guilty about some of these songs because I have a very nice partner, and I've had a very nice partner for a very long time.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, it's not him.
Yeah.
But I had the title for that song came from reading the book Shuggy Bane by Douglas Stewart,
right,
which is an incredible book, and he's an incredible writer. But there's a section in the book where the mum is talking to her son about what Glasgow was like back in the day, and that she wished he'd seen it because it was so vibrant and there was so much dancing. And I just loved that. And that is such a big part of the history of Glasgow, was like the Glasgow Barrowlands and people going dancing there. And I was thinking about that and then kind of merging that with my own experiences of going out when I was in my teens and in my 20s, and just accessing that kind of era of girlhood when me and all my friends would go out, and like, then what does that look like later when people have coupled off and they've partnered off, and like, you know, not by now most of my friends are married or divorced or have kids and are figuring all those things out. And I kind of was like, I want to write like a kind of fictional version of that life, of what that looks like. And we're now in a really adult era of divorce, like of breakups, where when you're 21, it's always this awful thing has happened. Yeah. What a terrible person. And now I kind of feel like the friends I know who are separating or divorcing, it's, you're both good people. It just doesn't work anymore. And that's kind of what I meant with that lyric, was like, I think that apathy or like slow death is sad in a different way.
Beautifully put. Lauren Mabry, what a delight to talk to you. The new album is Vicious Creature. I hope that this is the beginning of more solo work from you down the line, because it's a really exceptionally great album. So congratulations on that. And this is Anywhere But Dancing on FUV Live Sessions. Thanks, Lauren.
Drowning all the gossip under neon lights, sweating through a t-shirt on a Tuesday night, a pirouette to ruin, heart to heart and skin on skin, hands beneath a t-shirt on a Tuesday night. I've been searching for the airs and the graces. I've been looking down the river of changes. I stare into the mirror to find the face you used to wear, but it isn't there. Now it takes you anywhere but dancing. Dancing. All the greatest stories are in black and white, and the colors have been fading on the edge of mine. Eye to eye, to and fro, are we ever gonna go? Tripping fantastic on a Tuesday night. I've been searching for the airs and the graces. I've been looking down the river of changes. I stare into the mirror to find the face you used to wear, but it isn't there. It takes you anywhere but dancing. Anywhere but dancing.
Thanks to our WFUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, Aaron Merriman, and Renee Majekford. Our FUV live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producers for this episode were Diana Juarez and Lily Paterzo. Megan Aftermat is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV live sessions wherever you get your podcasts, so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. New episodes drop every Monday. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions on WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host and producer for this episode, Kara Manning.